Welcome to the Full of Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording. It's 1:28 p.m. that is Pacific Summer Time. Today is September 11th. It's been 18 years since the 9/11 attacks, and the USA is still in Afghanistan. The ousting of John Bolton potentially increases the potential for a rapprochement with either the Taliban or, for example, Iran. And that is being priced into the oil price, and it has now encountered resistance in the region of the trend mean. Today's downward dynamic confirms resistance in the region of the $64 area, and there's a clear downward bias evidence since April. It's been lower to lateral ranging over that same time frame, but the real challenge is that the shale oil producers are profitable anywhere above about $50. When we look at West Texas Intermediate, there's still a really significant divergence between Brent and WTI. It was also in negative territory today. It had been able to push back above the trend mean, and it's less of a consistent downtrend in terms of WTI pricing. We can also see on WTI that it has bounced on at least two occasions in June and August from that $50 area. It's an important area of support because it represents the level at which a number of the shale producers in fact make money. They are now in a positive free cash flow environment. That means that they're drilling fewer wells. They are trying to maximize their profitability, and that will continue as long as the price is just above where their break even is. They don't have a great incentive to go off and drill a whole load of new wells to bring drilled wells into production until prices are higher. That's one of the really attractive qualities of the unconventional sector, is that they can manage their supply to the price environment. Well, with the continued pressure that's being exerted on the oil price, then that removes a headwind from GDP growth globally. And I think that's one of the more important points. Then, of course, we have the fact that the quantity of bonds with a negative yield is also contracting. And it was at 17 trillion at the end of August, and it's now at 14.8. So this is a meaningful move in terms of bond markets. And it's not simply that we're seeing a move in the Treasury yield, which has had a really quite substantial bounce over the course of the last 2 weeks. But what we're seeing is it's a global phenomenon. So UK gilts are finding support around the 50 basis point level and confirming support around that 2016 low. When we look at the European benchmark, then what we're presented with is a very similar story. German Bund yields are also starting to rally in here. They're still in negative territory, but the 30-year German bond is now back in positive territory. When we even look at what's going on in terms of Japanese bonds, they've also, the yield there has bounced. So what we're seeing is a very strong commonality in terms of the sell-off that is occurring now in bond prices. This is most acute at the long end of the curve, particularly for the very long dated bonds. So the Austrian 100-year bond has contracted from 210 to 180 over the course of the last month. This is a major trend inconsistency. It's by far the largest pullback that we've seen. If we're starting to see the bonds selling off, then the bond proxies are also at risk. And for example, when we think about Microsoft, it had rallied really very spectacularly over the course of this year, not least because it had adopted the subscription business model and has got very modelable cash flows, it's now susceptible to some pause and consolidation. It's a very similar story when we think about companies like McDonald's or Starbucks. Again, these are companies that are really hallmarks of reliable, modelable cash flows, and these are peaks of at least near-term significance. We are potentially in for some ranging now rather than trending for at least the next few months. But on the other side of the equation, when bond yields start to rise, then that does take some of the pressure off the banking sector. And again, we have a very strong commonality in the performance of banks. The S&P 500 Banks Index is pushing back up towards the upper side of the range. It is too early to say that we're out of the woods, but it is at least pushing up to the upper side of the range. When we think about the European banking sector, it has bounced from the lower side of its 7-year range, and it is now pressuring the medium-term sequence of lower rally highs. The UK banking sector, the FTSE 350 banks, is in the process of unwinding a short-term oversold condition. So we are getting meaningful evidence here of some short covering. And this is also evident in the TOPIX banks, which has not quite halved, but really not far off it over the course of the last 20 months. It is now testing the region of the trend mean, but it has broken the sequence of lower rally highs. So that is a positive. Now, when we also look at I think another company that is rather interesting at this stage is Berkshire Hathaway. Considering the big investments that the company has in banks, the fact that it itself is an insurance company, which is interest rate sensitive, and then of course they own a railroad, which is part of the transportation sector, well, the share has been range bound now since the beginning of 2018, and it is firming within that range. The transportation index is pressuring the sequence of lower rally highs. The Russell 2000 is also starting to pressure its sequence of lower rally highs. So there is the potential that they can follow through on the upside. Now, we have had rallies similar to this over the course of this year, and they have not followed through. So we are going to need some upside follow-through in order to really confirm that we're back in a demand-dominated environment. A continued sell-off in the bond markets would certainly add some impetus to this move. And then, of course, we have the technology sector. The Philadelphia Semiconductors Index was at a new closing high in here today. This is, well, that's actually not true if we look at the peak from back in July. It's at least pressuring that peak. It's back above the 1600 point level. It has consolidated really quite well in the region of the trend mean, and it has held the sequence of higher reaction lows. That does suggest that there is potential here for additional upside. The Nasdaq is within a few points of its peak around the 8000 level. I think it is worth considering that the Nasdaq has a history of pausing around round numbers. It found support around 4000 as it paused around 5000. It paused at 7000 and found support around 6000. It rallied up towards 8000, found support at 7000. Well, I think if this kind of pattern is going to persist, well, then the next area of meaningful resistance will be at 9000. But the most important point is that we had the big upside key reversal from the region of the trend mean back in June, and since then this has looked like a consolidation rather than a top. And that is still not a popular view. So I think these are important considerations that when we think about simply the price action we're being treated to, there have been three 18-month consolidations in the trend over the last decade. There have been some meaningful pullbacks, and each one of these big pullbacks has found support in the region of the 1,000-day moving average. The S&P 500 today closed at the psychological 3,000. And this time it does look better supported than the last time it got up to test this level. We may yet see some additional mild consolidation, but as long as the index is finding support in the region of the trend mean, then we have to give the benefit of the doubt to the upside. I created this graphic earlier on today, which I thought was rather interesting. It is the relative performance of value compared to growth. Perhaps I'll type it into Bloomberg and we might get it a little larger. When we think about the most important points about the way the market has been evolving over the course of the last decade, the biggest influence has been the continued support the market has got from quantitative easing. And that has created a bull market in earnings agnostic strategies. And when I say earnings agnostic, then that's just an aphorism for earnings don't matter. It's another way of thinking about a momentum strategy. You simply buy the thing that's going up and don't worry about anything else. It's also how ETF and passive investing works, because the vast majority of stock market indices are market cap weighted. It gives a very substantial weighting to the best performing companies, and there is clear survivor bias in terms of those companies. The worst performers eventually get excised from the indices, so there is a clear survivor bias, but there's also momentum bias. When we are seeing increasingly large quantities of money allocated to the market on a market cap weighted basis, then that puts more money into the bigger companies. That has allowed Apple, Amazon, Microsoft to achieve perhaps not all at once, but $1 trillion valuations. Then, of course, the other flip side of that is that the kinds of strategies that do pay attention to earnings and attach a great deal of importance to earnings have been dismal performers since the credit crisis. In the period up from the lows in 2000, value appreciated relative to growth in really quite spectacular form. But over the course of the last 12 years, it has been an abysmal performance. And that has resulted in a substantial number of really quite high-profile value investors closing shop and handing money back to investors. Part of the reason for that is retirements, and they just have given up the ghost in terms of their ability to manage money when the rest of the world is completely absorbed with an earnings agnostic strategy. Well, we are starting to see that value is doing a little better than growth just recently, and it has had a substantial move since September, and that coincides with the pullback that we've seen in the bond markets. So that, I think, is meaningful. We are an awfully long way from breaking the downtrend, but at least there is some hope that value might be able to add value in terms of investor outcomes over the course of the medium term. Eventually, value will become fashionable again. It only makes sense that valuations do matter. The only time they don't matter is when the supply of money is limitless, and that is certainly the case now. And unfortunately, it's likely to remain the case from the perspective of an Austrian investor. But from the perspective of a momentum investor, the most likely scenario is that we are heading into a bubbly environment. I think it is quite clear there is a bubble in bonds. The increasing likelihood that modern monetary theory practices are going to be adopted, which essentially means that central banks lose their independence and they form a Faustian pact with governments to increase deficits through printing money. That is essentially de facto what we already have. There is the clear risk that it becomes codified, and that is likely to have a significant effect on inflation. Well, with bond yields starting to come down, then the bigger question is what happens in terms of commodities. The CCI index is still unwinding its oversold condition relative to the trend mean, but it has not yet broken it, and the downward pressure on oil prices could extend the period of underperformance. The gold price is unwinding its short-term overbought condition. It was in positive territory in here today for the first time in five sessions, but it has broken its sequence of higher reaction lows. Now, the bigger question is it going to just range here, or are we going to get a deeper pullback? I do think that we are likely to have a first step above the base form, and that does suggest that we would have a somewhat larger pullback. Silver has already had a somewhat larger pullback. It was relatively unchanged in here today, and I think it is too early to conclude that this is a low of more than short-term significance. I do think we are in for some ranging, which will allow that overbought condition relative to the trend mean to start to catch up. The true test of whether we are back in a clear demand-dominated environment for the precious metals over the medium term is the extent to which these breakouts hold, and or the extent to which we get mild consolidations and support in the region of the trend mean rather than fresh lows posted. This is going to be a question over the course of the next month or two. Of course, we are also heading into the seasonally more attractive period for risk assets generally, but also for the precious metals. So that's, I think, an important characteristic. When we then look at what's going on in Asia, the Hang Seng today was up in robust positive territory, so bouncing from the region of the lows put in at the end of last year, and it was led higher by the property markets, are the property developers. One of the primary issues that Hong Kong has is the absence of social housing, and I think the one thing that could placate the protesters is a clear commitment to provide social housing, to reduce the burden on ordinary people of trying to live in the most expensive real estate market in the world. So that's something that is potentially on the cards. The H-share index has also steadied from around the 10,000 level, and it is unwinding now the short-term oversold condition. It's going to have to sustain the move above 11,000 to really confirm we're back in a demand-dominated environment, but it is starting to look steadier in here. The Nikkei, with the pop on the banks, has demonstrated support in the region of the 20,000 level. And again, here we can see this is another index that is pressuring its sequence of lower rally highs. So this is a meaningful area where we might anticipate either resistance being encountered or a break in the downtrend. Considering the commitment of central banks and just the simple adage that monetary policy beats most other factors most of the time, I do think it is likely that we are going to see an increasing number of these indices breaking sequences of lower rally highs and returning to positions of outperformance. When we think about the global outlook, central banks the world over are lining up to provide stimulus. The Korean market is potentially now forming a failed downside break below 2000 and rapidly unwinding its oversold condition relative to the trend mean. Then when we think about Australia, it's obviously really quite exposed to what happens in China, but they are already engaged in both monetary and fiscal stimulus, and that has the ASX 200 has demonstrated support in the region of the 6400 level. We continue to see that there is relative support for the dollar, and it was well off its lows in here today, so I think we can conclude that that is a higher reaction low. It does suggest that there is potential for additional upside in here. We are going to have the ECB rate decision tomorrow, so the market has been waiting with bated breath, thinking about exactly what the ECB is going to deliver. There have been a number of hawks trying to moderate investor expectations over the course of the last week. The euro's performance continues to suggest that there is going to be a raft of new measures put in, but the bond market's performance suggests that it isn't potentially going to be as large as people were hoping for. But it does represent the potential first of the major central banks to re-engage with quantitative easing or some other form of additional significant stimulus. And then, of course, there is the fact that the strength of the dollar has been a contractionary factor in terms of the global central bank balance sheets. That is putting downward pressure on the Chinese in particular. And because the dollar has been steady, the total quantity of assets sitting on central banks has contracted back to the lows seen in May. So the strength of the dollar is one of the clearest inhibiting factors to emerging markets continuing to recover. It does also suggest that as long as the dollar is appreciating, that is going to put pressure on China. It is also going to attract assets to the USA. And that is one of the reasons why the stock market is continuing to do well. I continue to think that the kind of environment that we have today, the closest analog we have is of 1998, where we had a very profound move in terms of technology shares. There was a great deal of uncertainty about emerging markets following the Asian financial crisis. And we had abundant liquidity with central banks in the process of making funds available. That is what contributed to the bubble, the fact that the Federal Reserve has stated they are willing to do whatever is necessary to extend the longevity of the economic expansion is something that the market should be paying attention to. It does suggest that we are on the cusp of potentially a bubbly environment. Of course, that also means that once you do get a bubble, that you are going to potentially have a deeper recession subsequently, but the market can go up a lot before we have to, in fact, worry about that. And the reality is that we're seeing positive action coming through from a substantial number of sectors, and there is the clear potential that some of the cash that's been raised on the sidelines is going to be pushed back into the equity markets. I think with that, I'll leave you for today and wish all the best to all of you.